Welcome to CrimeWire, the place for information, news, and most importantly, justice. Our interactive website is www.crimewiresite.com. You can call in any time during the show. The number is 1-646-478-0982. And remember, you can participate in tonight's show simply by going to the live interactive chat room here on Blog Talk Radio. If you are a friend or family member and would like to send CrimeWire information, on an unsolved or suspicious death case, or have a specific crime-related topic you'd like to have discussed on a future show, email us at thecrimewire@gmail.com. Tonight's topic is the Haley Dunn case. I'm Kim Colton, host of CrimeWire, and I'll be manning the switchboard and monitoring the chat room. And now let me introduce my co-host for tonight's show, statement analyst and CrimeWire consultant, Peter Hyatt. Hi, Peter.
Hi, Kim. How are you?
I'm good. I'm sorry, my little doggie started barking there, and I had a...
Oh, I thought that was Karen. Okay.
Hello?
Oh, she's on.
Oh, me?
Are we live?
Oh. No,
yeah.
I'm Meow.
Oh.
Well, it's better than what we have going here. We have a, next door to us, a family of baby fox, and the mother, unfortunately, was teaching baby foxes how to, or foxes how to kill, and they must have got one of the neighbor's cats. So that's a god-awful noise to hear. So.
Oh, wow. Terrible.
Rural Maine. Yes.
Karen.
How are you, Karen?
Yeah.
It's wonderful to have you here. I just wanted to say it's wonderful to have Karen Goff here tonight. Thank you for joining us.
Well, thank you for having me here.
How you doing?
Oh, who, Peter or me?
You.
Oh, me. I'm doing very well. Well, you know, actually, except for the allergies, the spring here in the Ottawa area has finally sprung, and I think it's springing all within like 2 or 3 days. The pollen count is through the roof. So if I sneeze, you'll have to excuse me. Sometimes they come on very suddenly.
Yeah, that's how it is here, too. So tonight we're going to be discussing the Haley Dunn case, and we're going, Peter, I'll let you take it from here, because we're going to be reviewing some things, and that actually I'd love to review some things that caused you and Karen to draw your conclusions, and then
sure.
Let's get into the grand jury.
Yeah, I think that we've run into this wall of silence, and everyone is wondering what's going on. I get some messages that are fascinating, to say the least, and I've begun to read some of them. I have quite a few in my folder in Facebook, and many that I haven't read. I don't generally go that often except to post a link, but this week I've spent a little bit of time there, and apparently there were some Peter Hyatt sightings in Texas this week. We had a frost advisory here in Maine. It was pretty cold, and I wasn't in Texas. Others are concerned about my safety and well-being if I go to Texas because of some threats that were written on Facebook, including by Billie Jean Dunn. But no concerns of safety that way at all. And we've had a silence. We've not had any news. And what we do know is that there were apparently some jurisdiction issues that needed to be settled, and that it is my understanding, and I can say this confidently, that the jurisdiction issues are settled, and so that the March for Justice is going forward. There were two grand jury indictments handed down that were not released to the media. I do not believe that that's Sean Atkins and Billy Dunn. But I do believe that the wheels of justice are going forward, though. And of course, we have some hints. We had the man who found the remains, Curtis Lloyd, that was coming on, someone who I've gotten to know a little bit through Facebook and through talking on the telephone, a likable gentleman, a man who was interested in justice for Haley. He was scheduled to be on the program 2 weeks ago, and he suddenly had to withdraw, and he was not permitted to explain why. And so most people will understand that. Sounds very much like a gag order. And if there's a gag order, there's an order. If there's an order, there was someone to issue the order in Logic 101, and which tells you and tells me without any inside information that the wheels of justice are going forward. But it should also tell the astute listener that merely stumbling upon the remains is probably not enough to want to issue a gag order or silence of some form. It should be speaking, and I won't go much further with this than that, but it should speak to people. Karen, one of the most fascinating things about running the blog the last few years is not just the cases that we've uncovered, but the way that readers are now listening. I cannot even answer a yes-no question without being caught. They seem to almost count every word after the word no or every word after the word yes and are ready to come back. And it's very exciting, actually. Someone had asked recently, how do you like having that powerful beam turned on you? And I said, I do like it because I'm honest. But what happens is when I'm not allowed to reveal something for whatever reason, whether someone shared it that doesn't want it known or another reason, I will go into a passive voice and the astute listeners will say, we hear your passivity, Peter Hyatt. We know what that means. You're concealing the identity of where it came from, or you're withholding information from us. What are you withholding? So it's kind of tricky, and I've been answering the Facebook messages today, avoiding answering questions, which they will then say they have asked sensitive questions. So it's kind of neat in that sense. But we do want to be careful because the interest of justice comes before anything.
Absolutely.
And I think that, yeah, it's really first and foremost, but it has been kind of interesting to see the increase in what I consider logic and the ability to follow an argument. Others consider it a listening skill developed from practicing statement analysis, but it really is kind of an old-fashioned classical education type of thinking where someone is literally able to listen, to know the basis of an argument, and to respond to it. And it's working. And what I'm also seeing is that they're going back over some of the statements in this particular case, and some of them are pulling out gold mines in even the form of questions. So what I'd like to do tonight is just bounce back and forth a little bit some of the things that I believe or you believe or we believe that the grand jury will be hearing if they have not heard already. Some of the testimony that will be presented. For our listeners, a grand jury is almost a casual gathering. It literally is not a casual, but it will have a casual feel to it as opposed to the rules in court. A grand jury can ask questions. A grand jury can literally interview a witness. Witnesses are allowed to plead the Fifth Amendment. That is something that infuriated the public and infuriated me in the case of missing 7-year-old Kyron Harmon, who I wish to mention now because we're coming up upon the June 4th anniversary very rapidly of when he went missing. Kyron was 7 years old when he went missing. The last person that had him was in sight was his stepmother, Terry Harmon. And Terry Harmon was deceptive, according to statement analysis. It was reported by her then-husband that she failed her polygraph. She was very embittered against the boy and against her husband. And Dee Dee Spiker, her best friend, in the few statements she made, she was deceptive. She pled the Fifth Amendment when she was asked questions regarding Kyron's whereabouts. So Desiree Young, 7-year-old Kyron Harmon's mother, was left bereft of any comfort of having closure for her son, and she has been a model of strength hanging in there, but it's been very difficult. So the Fifth Amendment can be invoked. It is a right to protect oneself against self-incrimination. It is at times frustrating and infuriating, but it puts the burden of proof upon the state. So direct questions by a grand jury to Sean Atkins, for instance, would likely be met with the Fifth Amendment, or Billie Jean Dunn likely be met with the Fifth Amendment. However, they can ask questions, and they can note the fact that someone is refusing to answer a question, and this can all go into their decision-making process. Even if it's said to something discounted, it's going to have an emotional impact. So what I'd like to do is to look at some of those things to give some confidence back to people that we said all along that we believed the Marines would be found eventually. They would be found probably by someone stumbling on them, and that's what happened. And we believe that justice is coming and that those responsible for Haley Dunn's death will be held accountable. So I hope that listeners are holding on to that. The idea of justice in our country is still there, and we saw it recently with the robbery in the Casey Anthony case, but then we saw with Jodi Arias, a jury that was able to ask questions in the court, follow questions given to the judge, and then later on made a decision for justice. So don't give up hope and bear with us in this. So, Karen, I'd like to throw out a few things. Were you involved in analysis early on in the case, or did you come in later?
No, I came in later. Yeah, you were the first one on the scene.
Yeah, it was one of those cases where, because of the Casey Anthony case, Heather and I had started watching Nancy Grace, and I wasn't paying much attention to the show. This was January 2011, when she elbowed me and said, uh-oh, I hear a mother speaking in the past tense. And so with the modern technology, I rewound it a little bit, and I said, well, you know, let's not jump to conclusions here because maybe she's speaking of a specific past tense event.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
Yeah, and I just did not want another mother pleading for her child while she's lying. I didn't want another type of situation like that. We've seen it before. We've seen it too often. But as the mother spoke, there were too many uh-oh moments to ignore. And then eventually we, as we both were listening intently, we heard the mother mention her toothache. And that was the, for us, that's what threw it in. When someone's child is missing and you have the wherewithal to talk about yourself, that is usually a problem. And toothache, backache, that sort of thing, usually is an indication of prescription medication abuse. And so that just spiraled from there. But Karen, early on, and Kim, you might remember this as well, early on, this is very early now, before many people had read my analysis, and I can judge that by the volume there, the suspicion fell quickly and heavily upon Sean Atkins. Billie Jean Dunn had a window opportunity to play the victim, to play the abused woman role in domestic violence, and here was a scary big guy with masks, and he was a monster. It was a word that he hated being portrayed as. But she squandered that opportunity by lying about him. And what I understand from talking to different people who were on the scene there is that what she did was she listened to police as if they were kind of an older brother giving her advice, saying, well, you know, we're going to find your daughter, don't worry, but we need you to stay away from this guy because he's not a good guy. And she was saying, oh, thank you, and yeah, I'm a little scared of him, and perhaps I could use some protection from you, and if I need you, I'll call you, thank you. And then she'd run off and tell him everything. So the public, at least, had a longer view chronologically that Sean Atkins was the main suspect and that Billie Jean Dunn was this innocent victim in all of it. The police were the first to recognize, and we, of course, using analysis, were right there with them, saying, uh-uh, that's not the case at all. But early on, it's a question people have for us, is why was Sean Atkins named in media a suspect and Billie Jean Dunn not named a suspect of personal interests? And the answer to that is that that's not true. The different media in Texas, and I've spoken to them, I think most of the basic players I've spoken to, someone from each of the companies, and their editorial rules are that unless law enforcement tells them on record that someone is a person of interest or a suspect, they won't say it. So what happened was different media called different arms of law enforcement. Some called the Sheriff's Department, some called Colorado City, some called the Texas Rangers, some tried to get information from the FBI, who were more close-lipped. But what they got was a lot of opinions. So early on, the different arms of law enforcement say, oh, yeah, Sean's a suspect, not realizing that they're actually speaking on record. And I believe it was the Texas Rangers who said both mother and boyfriend were persons of interest, but unless that media heard it for themselves, they didn't report it that way. Their editors had said, you can't do it that way. It's got to come directly through us. And this was part of the idea of the jurisdiction, because they were getting opinions on an investigation early from different arms of law enforcement who had different amounts of information. They weren't apparently sharing information early on either. And I think people can understand that sometimes there's a competitive nature between any two individuals, but now you multiply that even more, and so everyone is following their own leads and their own ideas. It has all come together now. It's all under one umbrella, and it should go forward very well. But at that time, there was some confusion. So the different opinions, including the town manager, who was practically, he was in a lot of trouble with the public for saying that Haley was dead, but what he said to the people was, please do the math. 2 and 2 is 4. You're looking at the length of time that she's missing. You're looking at drugs and kiddie porn and all this other stuff. It doesn't look good for her. He was trying to gently let the people understand that. While the mother herself was actually fueling the quote-unquote hope for Haley, which is something that has caused a lot of bitterness locally for the people, because it's a natural inclination to have hope. And here the mother was demanding hope for Haley and condemning people who weren't having hope for Haley at the six-month anniversary, saying, see y'all next year, see y'all in 6 months at the one-year anniversary, knowing full well the child is dead.
Yeah, and that was weird.
It was, and it was upsetting to people emotionally. It was a twisting of emotions that I thought was very unfair.
Well, my question is this: is how would she know in 6 months that Haley would not have been found in that time period? If she's saying we'll see you in 6 months, right?
It was one of those consciousness of guilt type of moments where she had many of those moments, where she would, where she slipped into the past tense. The biggest issue is, and this is what I'll start with, is let's look at the chronology of it all. The child was reported missing on December 28, 2010. On December 31st, 2010, the mother and Sean Atkins hosted a New Year's Eve party. This was very upsetting. Nancy Grace got a whiff of it, and this is when she really went after Billie Jean on this one. And Billie Jean tried to soften it, and she said, no, we're just couples of there. No one was worrying about a party. And no one asked her if anyone was worrying about a party. But it was actually Clint Dunn who had told the police that there were quite a lot of empties, as he called them, empty beer bottles and empty beer cans stacked up, and they had quite a shindig. It was really hard for people to digest how a mother of a missing child could not only not search for the child the day she reported her missing, but how she could party on New Year's Eve. So Nancy Grace, in kind of a theatric style, said, well, if there wasn't a party, were you all together? Yes. Were there more than one person? Yes. Did you serve alcohol? Well, Sean had a beer. Did you serve alcohol? Well, there were a couple of drinks. And did you have the TV on? Did you watch the ball drop? And she twisted Billy pretty good to get the fact out that behavioral analysis shows that when a child goes missing, a parent calls for the child. A parent will say, where are you? Whether they're in a grocery store or a shopping mall, at the beach, at the park, or kidnapped, the parent is going to have a natural reaction to call out. Ms. Dunn did not have any such inclination to go and search for her child, nor to communicate with her child through television. Then they went ahead and had a party. And so the grand jury is going to hear, not only did she not search, but the next day the Haley's father showed up with his girlfriend and baby in a stroller and was saying, hey, let's go out and search now. Can you tell me which way and come with me, that sort of thing. He said that Billie Jean would not get up off the TV. Her favorite soap opera was on, and she wasn't budging. And David, age 16, her son, did not mobilize his classmates, did not hand out flyers, did not search. In fact, he was playing a video game, and Clint said, I was shocked. I was shocked. I couldn't believe that they were doing this. Just seemed like nothing was wrong. This, again, is something that the grand jury will hear. It's not where a grand jury is going to hear, hey, she used a past tense pronoun, that child's dead, end of discussion. It's going to be a lot of little pieces of a puzzle coming together. And so they'll hear that, and that'll have an emotional impact. So a behavioral analysis, they'll say, not only did the mother not call out to the child, but she was completely indifferent to the child's plight, and she actually had a party. So then they'll hear that the mother then went on television, and the mother will say that, well, I was pleading for my child's life. One of the things that we noted early on in all the television appearances, the body language analysis, people were jumping up and down because she was grooming herself and making herself look presentable, I guess would be a good word to use. She appeared to actually enjoy the attention, but what was missing was the one thing that Kim, you, or Karen, you, or I, or Heather, anyone else, would not have to be told, but she had to be coached by Mark Kloss how to speak to Haley. It was something that she had never done in all her appearances, and she appeared a lot. And that's one of the things he coached her to do. Now, you talk to Haley. I got to tell you, the sheriff's department was very displeased that he was there, and they told me in no uncertain sound that they did not appreciate that. They did not need him coaching and tampering with someone's behavior. They wanted to let it be as it was. But we're looking at someone who needed coaching, who did not show care or concern.
But you know what I'll say here, though, too, Peter? Like statement analysis, we know statement analysis. We know the rules. We know, if we really think about it, we know how to present something that is not true. However, even though we know statement analysis and we know where the pitfalls are, we still fall into those pitfalls. And even though she's being told this is how you behave, guess what? She can't behave that way, really, in a natural sense.
It's a good point. You or I could say, I didn't do it, in a prepared statement.
Exactly.
But once someone gets us talking and we enter that free editing process where we're speaking for ourselves, we are a subject to the laws of the analysis and will be caught in lies no different than anyone else.
Exactly. So while she may have been coached, once the coaching, if she doesn't have someone standing there telling her exactly what to say, left to her own devices, she'll revert back to what is the normal behavior for her.
Right, her baseline. And she did that. And the grand jury will be able to see she actually needed to be coached. She had to be grabbed and dragged into a locker room and told to put decent clothes on and stop dressing inappropriately at rallies. And here's your, you don't have a Haley T-shirt? Put this Haley T-shirt on. What are you doing? And what she portrayed was, I'm just kind of a simpleton, and I didn't realize I should have a Haley T-shirt on. No, she's quite, I tip my hat to her intellect. She has a good intellect. She may not have a good education. She may butcher the English language as it is in its proper form, but that's more educational rather than intellectual. She has a good intellect. And in fact, what we learned early on was not only did the leakage show, or the loose marbles show that her daughter was dead, but it showed that she was the author of the story. She did not enter into Sean Atkins' language and say, Sean said that she was going to a sleepover, and Sean said, nope, this was her own language, her own words, and even that shows that she was the ringleader. Then the grand jury will ask about the polygraphs. A polygraph is generally not admissible unless both parties stipulate to it. It is not something that is likely to happen. Her attorney would not. But the grand jury can hear about that. And the grand jury will hear, Sean Atkins was asked to take a polygraph. Sean Atkins refused. She spoke to him. What they did was they went to her and played that type of role of protector, big brother protector, and said, hey, Billy, you can help us find Haley. Get him to take a polygraph because we're going to ask him about locations, which they did. And she went and spoke to him, and I believe the conversation went something like, what are you, nuts? And she said, we can beat this. Here, I've got some tranquilizers. We'll get you high. I'll be high. We'll pass the polygraph. He went. He walked out again. He went back. They could tell visibly, and you can, for readers that listeners that don't know this, that the eye will not go horizontally in a very smooth manner when you're under the influence of something, and there'll be that little jiggle as the finger goes left and right, and they could be seen visibly that they're under the influence, and they were sent home. The grand jury, and Colin, you can comment on this, but the grand jury will then say, she had a reason to get high before the polygraph. They had a need to deceive the polygraph and give that consideration. Is that fair to say?
Yes. Yes.
Okay. And then,
yeah,
now
I
she's
would say that
challenge.
Some might say, "Oh, but she's, you know, she's so upset by her daughter being missing that
we'll address that too then."
Yeah, that's a possibility that some people will think that as well, but you have to look at her behaviors before and after the polygraph. Did she take those tranquilizers on a regular basis every single day, or just when she had to take the polygraph?
That's a great point, and I would not begrudge anyone a need of anything to help them sort of get through the situation, but we'll look at the big picture. So then she is sent home with the challenge. Hey, you said you'd do this. You showed up stoned. You know you can't do that. Are you still going to come back? And so there was some back and forth warring going on, and she did finally show up, and she failed. Then she said, the reason I failed is because they told me Sean failed before I took it, and they upset me. And law enforcement has since said, that is not true. She was not given any information before she took her polygraph. But let's look at a polygraph from the point of someone being utterly distraught over losing their daughter. The daughter's missing. They're utterly distraught. And we're going to ask five questions. Question one, is your name Billy Dunn? And she's sobbing and she's crying. And pretend the needle goes from 0 to 10. And the needle goes all the way up to a 6. She is just so emotional. Her heart is pounding and everything is, my name is Billy Dunn. Yes. And boom, it jumps up to a 6. Do you live on such and such street? And she's crying and heaving, and boom, it jumps all the way up to a 6. So now we see she's really emotional. She's really upset. Did you cause Haley's disappearance? Answer, no. Boom, it goes flying past 6 all the way to 10. It doesn't matter how upset someone is. Wherever their baseline is, what they're looking for is change. What questions cause a change for a person that's either very calm or upset? Makes no difference. That's just their baseline. What they did was, which I thought was very wise, is they asked Sean Atkins a few questions with the machine still hooked up, including who should they look at and where will the remains, where should they look? So he was asked, who should they be investigating? He said, me and Billy. And the needle did not shoot up. And when they asked him, where should we look? And he said, Scurry County, and the needle remained very calm as well. These they interpreted as, and I would do the same, as indicators of veracity that he was telling the truth. And this is why we have said from the beginning, she'll be found deceased. Mother spoke of her in past tense several times and has shown behavior as if she's dead. And she was indeed found in Scurry County. Karen, I know we can't go into it because it's really deep, but what I've discovered in looking back over this is that in chronological time of the statements, Billie Jean Dunn changes from the overnight when I believe that Haley was killed and never speaks directly to her or of her after that in all the accounts. And that's where we have that bizarre, I looked in her room, she looked like she was sleeping,
yeah,
but I didn't touch her. And I think she gave the reason why she didn't touch her. Because she, being Billy Dunn, needed to be assured.
She needed to ease, as she put it, to ease my mind.
Yes, she needed comfort. Her mind needed to be eased. That's correct.
Yes.
This is something that the grand jury is going to hear. So when Nancy Pierce started out, it was pretty interesting. She said, well, I don't know what to believe either because I'm getting all these different stories about you having a New Year's Eve party and you're high when you take the polygraph. Let me ask you this. Let's go back to the facts. When was the last time you absolutely are positive you saw Haley? And then you look at the structure. She said, I saw her Sunday night. Now, I know that if it was my child or any of your children, you would hear your child's name so much more often. I saw Sean. I shouldn't use that name because it's the same as Sean Atkins. I saw my daughter, and using her name, I saw her Sunday night. That is a very strong statement where she uses the pronoun A, she uses the past tense, and she adds nothing to the sentence, which is her norm, where she loves to add on many additional and needless words as she's kind of hedging her bets in life. I saw her Sunday night. I believe that she did. I believe she told the truth. What time? 10 p.m., which is unfortunate because Nancy Grace gave her the time. Billy said, probably around 10, two qualifiers for 10. Then she said, now, was that when you looked in her room and it was dark and you thought she was lying in her bed? Again, a leading question. She said, I saw her Sunday night. Saw being past tense. Now she switches. I did see her in her room, but I saw her watching TV. Why would she use the word but in that sentence?
Well,
that was really, it's a curveball to me.
Yeah, it is. It doesn't make sense because normally a person would say, I saw her in her room and she was watching TV.
I did see her in her room, but I saw her, I did see, present tense,
mm-hmm.
but I saw her, going to past tense, watching TV. So this, right away, she has my attention with this strange change in language that I can't seem to grasp. But
well, yeah, going
talking.
From the did see to saw is a change of language.
So there must be a change in reality according to our rules.
Exactly, but there is nothing inside the statement that would justify her change in language.
Correct.
And so when there is an unjustified change in language, it is likely that deception is present at that point in the statement.
And what could be the deception? Because I had just said before that I believe her, but I think that it's so common among human beings that when we say we saw somebody, we don't say, if I said, oh, I was in the snowy hills of Wisconsin the other day and I saw Kim. I wouldn't say I was in the snowy hills of Wisconsin. Sorry, Kim, if I got the wrong place. But I wouldn't say I saw Kim alive. Peter, did you expect to see her any other way?
Yeah. True that.
I saw Karen in Canada. I saw Karen in Canada alive. That would be a really bizarre thing. This is what I think the deception is in the change of language. I know it sounds like we're on a small point, but this is her speaking extemporaneously. Then she said, Monday morning, I looked into her room, so she does know how to use past tense words. I looked into her room, and it was dark, and it looked like she was lying in bed. Not that she was lying in bed, but it looked like. But I didn't go touch her. Make sure that was her.
Oh, creepy.
Yeah, it really is creepy. I just peeked in to make sure she was in bed to ease my mind. That has the what the scan technique calls the cluster of blues.
Mm-hmm.
And this is where we're looking at I consider in the years that I've been covering this case, the single most sensitive statement ever from the lips of Billie Jean Dunn is right there.
And you know what else is in there? There's another change of language in there. I looked in her room, I just peeked. She goes from looked to peeked.
Yes.
And
I think I know why
there's something inside that statement to tell us why she changed, you know, that would justify her changing her language there.
And I only have a guess on it. And it is related again to the deception, because she the deception is this. Nancy Grace is presupposing, the way I did when I said I saw Kim, I saw Karen, that the person's alive. Nancy Grace is presupposing that you're talking about a living being, so you don't need to mention that. Billie Jean Dunn is deceptive because she's talking about a dead child.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I think the change of language. And I think that she did peak, and I'll tell you why. I think that she was emotionally upset over all that had happened and scared out of her mind.
Mm-hmm.
No matter what motive was behind it, dead bodies are creepy things. None of us liked them. When we were kids, we were driving by a cemetery, we used to hold our breath. I'm not sure why, but we used to. When everyone sees it, when someone sees a dead body, it's just kind of a startling thing in life. I think that she did peek in, and the change of language is due to her deception, because Nancy Grace and the Nancy Grace audience our reality is Elias Haley, but it wasn't the reality of the speaker. So I peeked in to make sure, and I wondered what that even meant in terms of making sure that she was really dead. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
I think we'll find out as we get into this. But that was really, really frightening stuff. But go ahead.
Well, I have a question from Boston Lady regarding this situation. She says here, I don't think she looked at anything. She says, I think it's all made up.
That's a fair explanation.
She may have stuck her nose in to see if Haley had been moved or not. And then Boston Lady's question is, wouldn't the cadaver dogs pick up if Haley's body was in the bed that morning?
Okay, a couple things on that. First of all, Khan had said the change of language, there's nothing within the statement that can justify the change, and so that we're looking at deception. In terms of peeking in, I could be right. The others that commented could be right. We don't know, and we're asking that, but there is something that's going wrong there. Could it be that they were watching her breathing? What if she had OD'd and the breathing was getting shallow, more shallow and more shallow? Okay. That's a possibility, that she was still alive at that point, but she was dying. And there would still be the same expectation that I went to Canada and I saw Karen and she was dying would be needed to be said. It's something that would, otherwise you're going to presuppose someone's fine if you saw them.
Right.
This case where Nancy Grace is thinking, no, she's just asleep, that sort of thing, and she knows she's being deceptive. Deception is there, we just don't know exactly why. So what if she looked in to see if she was still breathing, or had Sean moved her? And then on top of that, we have, there was some controversy, and I'll be careful with this, were sheets moved? Were they removed from that home? I do know that there was a focus by law enforcement on the shed that was back there. So I don't know. The whole hypersensitivity about Sean's coveralls, you know, was that part of that? So there's a lot of questions. I think some of these things will be answered with time. But at that point, I believe that Haley was dead or dying. And I don't know how long she would be in that home until she was taken out. Was she taken to the shed in the interim? I don't know. But the grand jury hopefully will help us learn more of these things. Continue with Sean's behavior. So Sean goes to work, and he was deceptive to police about the route he took, and then later on he said, well, they didn't ask me if I didn't make a left there, so I didn't tell them. They're kind of blaming the police sort of thing. That was a pattern for both of them. He drove to work early in the morning, and the grand jury is going to wonder why he said he got fired. The grand jury is going to wonder why him getting fired was changed to he had another job, which wasn't true. And then that story will change and they'll want to know why he went and got a soda, spoke to no one. Then they'll want to know why he said he got into a fight with someone and he didn't get into a fight with anyone. That they're going to look at the suspicious behavior, which she could have used against him to get herself out of this mess, except for one major thing. She could not eject herself from this case because she was not simply covering for him. There had to be behavior in this case where both of them had such guilt on each other that if one went down, the other went down. Now, we've heard rumors that Sean Atkins, through his attorney, has either made overtures or wants to make overtures. He wants to spill and tell all. Okay? That obviously rattled Billy Dunn enough that she posted on Facebook telling us that she knows that he's capable of doing that. These two have been bonded by lies for the past 2+ years, and someone is going to probably testify against the other. But as the grand jury looks at this, they'll wonder, why would someone act so strange? But then they're going to place it in the time frame. Why act so strange the day that Haley is missing? Why go out and buy drugs when they did? How often did you do that sort of thing? Like, Karen, you said earlier about finding out their baseline. Did you go out nightly to buy drugs, or was it just that night? Another issue on that is with the sensitivity of left. When someone leaves a place, we saw that the son left, I think around 9 or 10 o'clock, that story changed a few times as well. That leaving was very sensitive. And I think that whatever happened to Haley, David's presence hindered that. Whatever happened to Haley couldn't happen until David was gone, and that's why the sensitivity of the word left.
Mm-hmm.
Someone asked recently if David had a poor relationship with his sister, would that have hindered him from helping search for her? I think quite the contrary. I think that if David had a poor relationship with his little sister and his little sister went missing, we would see probably even a like a projection of that guilt seen in hyperactivity. But any 16-year-old boy is going to play the role of big brother and hero. He's going to mobilize. He's going to get his friends searching. The school is going to move quickly. They're going to put up posters. They'll search fields. They'll search everywhere, those ugly fields, according to Billy Dunn, where she was found. A brother would naturally do this. Doesn't have to be a good brother or a bad brother or close or distant. A brother is going to naturally react this way. The day after reporting his 13-year-old sister missing, playing video games could have been a way of distracting himself from the pain. But at that point, being close to Clint, one would think he would get up and begin to search. He did not. They're going to then hear, the grand jury, about this closeness between Billy Dunn and her son, Billy Dunn and her brothers, who did not search, who were at her New Year's Eve party, who seemed to show no concern. Although they apparently found it amusing that Sean Atkins talked about killing a girl is just like killing a deer. Him with his coveralls and his Michael Myers mask, yeah. So they're going to hear all these type of things. Yeah, it's overwhelming.
It is.
It's overwhelming.
We do have a question in the chat room by John, as John McGowan. Peter, did Billie Jean Dunn use the words coveralls or overalls? Or did she use overalls and then change it to coveralls? And I asked him what he was thinking on this, and he said, if there was a change in language, maybe the coveralls were used to wrap Haley in.
That's a great
interesting
point.
Yeah, it is.
John, thank you for your question. We'll look into it. If I missed it in the analysis, I should go back and find it. So thank you. That's a great point. Karen,
thanks,
that's what
John.
I meant about readership and listeners just growing in understanding.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And how, you know, despite how many statements we've analyzed in our careers, we still miss things. And it's fabulous when someone who's in the process of learning grabs on to a concept and is able to then feed it back to us and say, hey, you know, did you think about this? And it's like, okay, that's a good point. That's wonderful. And that is why we like working in groups, in doing an analysis. Peter and I work very well together because he sees certain things and I see certain things. And when we do our online with the other investigators from around the world and we do cases, it's amazing how everybody contributes to the process.
I can't picture another show where a question like that would be asked. And I know it sounds like we're tooting our horn, but it's a great question. And now I find my mind going back to her words and trying to, and I'll have to look it up obviously in the computer, but to find out if there was a change there. So that's what I was referring to early. Karen, in coming into the case late, what were some of your initial impressions? Is it as overwhelming, because we've only touched the surface here, is it as overwhelming evidentially as it sounds? What were some of your thoughts early on?
From a statement analyst point of view, it didn't take me long in reading some of her statements for me to be thinking, yeah, there's a real problem here. So, you know, that's from the statement analyst point of view. From the investigators, my investigator side, when I look at everything that is here, I think there is enough that the grand jury is going to be able to hand down indictments on them both.
Does it look like a simple case to you in terms of indictments?
Simple? Not exactly simple. I think they want to be thorough.
Simple in terms of decision for making the decision.
Yeah. There's too much here to say no. We don't have anything to go on. There is just far too much. So I think that it's just a matter of understanding everything, because there is a lot to this, and there's a lot to this case too that is not publicly known, I'm sure.
You're correct.
Yeah, so there's a lot that we won't know as the public, but the grand jury is going to know. So if you take what we know that is publicly available and figure that, you know, is there, you know, a certain percentage that we don't know that is, and that for a good reason, because it's going to eventually be used as evidence, that you've got to figure there's going to be enough here. In fact, it could be a plethora of information. And they do have to go through it all. They can't just say, okay, we've seen it, you know, we've seen enough. Everything does have to be presented. They have to be able to take it in its entirety to be able to, you know, come to their conclusion. And I believe, nine have to agree, I think? Or is it, no, is it 100%? No, because there's anywhere between 16 and 23 people on a grand jury. And I don't think, it doesn't have to be 100% everyone agrees.
No, I don't believe so. It might be different state to state, though. I don't know.
Yeah.
That's why we have, every so often we have a lawyer on the show to help us out with those things. I've actually put myself into the position of defense attorney for both Sean Atkins and Billie Jean Dunn, and I've asked myself, how would I defend her? Because she had an emotional base of support early on that quickly evaporated, and each time the news came out, each time that she spoke, each time that she went on Facebook, the number dropped to now this small little, almost a viral type of circle of people threatening and kind of like we're in love with Billie Dunn sort of thing. But some of them are continuing, even up to today, to send me the transcripts of conversations they've had either privately through messaging or in one of the chat rooms where they talk. And the people that do this said, I was a supporter, and then this happened, and then that happened. And so for them, it's like these small aha moments. The grand jury gets to hear it all. In my own attempt to find ways to defend them, I haven't been able to poke a hole in anything. I haven't been able to explain away any of the behavior, because you can try to spin things, or I can try to spin things. This is a distraught mother. This is a scared boyfriend. And, it's too much. It's everything. And so what I think people are going to look at one day is people look at the interview Scott Peterson gave on television, the one in which he called his marriage glorious. And they look back with grinded teeth because he called it glorious while his wife and preborn son were floating dead in the water. And here he was with a handsome smile and that sort of thing. I think that Billie Dunn herself has so aggravated the public with her appearances, with her taunts, with her insults at law enforcement, with her insults at people that did not support her or even questioned her, how vicious that she would become so quickly. And then there's all the photos of the partying that is way beyond Casey Anthony. And that was another point. Casey Anthony had a certain appeal for the public, that the Dirty Dancing photo was very popular. She got $250,000 for a couple of videos of Kaylee. Connor or Kim, please weigh in. I don't see anyone paying a penny for the filth that came out of Texas. The child pornography, the drugs, the methamphetamine look on the face, everything.
Nothing.
Well, at least not anyone that we would want to associate with. No.
Right.
I guess you say a pornographer from California may come in, that sort of thing.
Yeah, that's
point.
True.
Yeah.
But
well, yeah.
Nancy
oh, yeah.
Grace,
if there are other weirdos that are into this, but now the thing is that stuff though is evidence, correct? Because that stuff was all gathered, so it is now officially evidence, and it won't be released.
And I think, and this is from the outside looking in, I think that as the investigators looked over the evidence and jurisdiction was solved, everyone came together, everyone knows who's leading prosecution now, everyone knows who's presenting, okay, that's simple, is that the evidence that they had early on, which did not make sense to them, I think a lot of it has made sense now. I think they have a really good idea of what the big picture
right.
is.
And I just want to say that from what I understand, there are 23 people on a grand jury, and if 12 or more agree, it has to be 12.
Okay, 12.
Then it can proceed. Yeah. Not all of them have to.
Right.
That's good. A lot of us can recall with a little element of bitterness the grand jury that came to indict John and Patsy Ramsey in the death of the child JonBenet. That was like it was like a Casey Anthony punch in the stomach. Casey Anthony jury punch in the stomach. By the way, I just have to ask, did anyone see the pictures of O.J. Simpson in the news today?
Yes.
Well, I
a little bloated.
Him on the TV, on in court. Yes.
Yeah. It's another one of those cases where people had just an utter shock at the verdict. At least some of us did. I was stunned. I did not believe that there could possibly be anything but guilty. It was one of them. He was in. He's looking to get out of jail again, and he's pushing about 300 pounds. He's all smiles and looks like he's having a good time in prison there. I wonder if he's still searching in there for Nicole's killer.
Yeah, I wonder. Hey, we do have a question from Jenny Rose or Jeannie. I think it's Jenny Rose. Has anything been confirmed about the grand jury in Haley's case meeting? I mean, has anything been?
Not to me. So no, that's why I said they've either heard or are hearing, because I don't know. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
And I won't ask those that for instance, someone like Curtis Floyd, for instance, he can't answer any questions.
Mm-hmm.
It would not be fair for either I, Karen, you, Kim, or our listeners to ask him yes or no questions. It's not fair.
Right.
So
No. It could ruin everything.
Well, it would cause him to violate that, possibly, and that's not fair to him either.
Right.
Right. I am vocal about the fact that I believe there should be no hindrance to him receiving that award or reward. You know, he told me he wanted to do it with the award money.
What?
He wanted to buy a memorial for Haley.
Oh, wow. Aww. Yeah.
Yep. He's that type of guy. Yep. But he's a local, and he has wanted justice for a long time, and he himself was aggravated, like the rest of us, with all those appearances by the mother, constantly hamming it up for the camera and running down law enforcement and talking her conspiracy theories. It's a hot case right now, but people will forget Jodi Arias years from now. People aren't talking about OJ any longer. It happened to come up today, and it'll disappear again. Those that do these type of crimes and spend many years in prison, really no one talks about it afterwards. The fame is gone. The infamy is gone. In the Haley Cummings case, no one's saying, what's Ronald Cummings? Is he running for cellmate president this year? Or, you know, so-and-so gained weight or lost weight. No one cares. And that's mm-hmm. where she's had this fame. Atkins didn't want it. He ran from it, and that's why I think he'll be the one, especially with his family's background, to make a deal and testify against her. But she is going to go down, and I don't believe there's any way that she could accept a plea bargain of any type. I think that she'd rather go to the death penalty with all the fame of having that camera on her for months after months in trial than lose that just to save her life. I think that she's that much of a narcissist where she has to have it. Casey Anthony believed that she was going to get away with this. She believed it. And did either of you see Judge Melvin Perry on television?
No, I heard he was on, but no, I didn't get a chance to see it.
I didn't watch it, but I did read some of the things that he said, and he was, like us, infuriated. He said that Casey was two different people, that she put on the mourning mother look when the jurors came in, and then she was back to being the bobblehead, happy-go-lucky party girl when they were gone, that sort of thing. I don't understand, from a legal standpoint, why he couldn't set aside the decision and do other actions or why he didn't take action at this point or that point. But he knew, though, at least. That was, I think, comforting to some people that he wasn't duped by anybody the way the jury appeared to be. He couldn't understand their verdict either. So mm-hmm. these cases do go away. She could have a couple months of fame, but I don't think... look at the Nancy Grace show. They did not even do a show on it when the remains were found. You know, a full show on it. So I don't think it has any of the attractions. We don't like people call it the meth look, a certain look that addicts have, that just they prematurely aging and unhealthy, and all the surgery and Botox and bleaching of skin and hair can't cover that look, that look of death. I don't think it has the Hollywood pull. I don't see anyone paying $250,000 for anything. I think that John Young is going to have to find a way to earn his money some way else, because she competes with him for the camera, and they both love it. She's better at it than he
mm-hmm.
is.
I agree. And, Peter, I have to say, Karen,
mm-hmm.
we are almost out of time. We've got about a minute left. So I would like to thank both of you for being with us tonight, and, of course, always thank our guests in the chat room. You guys are wonderful. Thanks to our public relations team at ImaginePublicity.com. Our next show will be next Tuesday. Tune in as we continue to analyze cases that wreak havoc on families, looking for answers and seeking justice, and discuss crime-related topics with the experts. To hear a rebroadcast of tonight's show, go to www.crimewire.blogspot.com. Turn on the volume at your computer and the show will automatically play. Until next time, God bless and stay safe. And again, thank you, Peter. Thank you, Karen. You guys are wonderful.
Thank you.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night.